Hello and welcome to another episode of this podcast, which is all about animation in the industry. It's called The Animation Industry Podcast. Super creative, I know. My name is Terry, and last week I partnered with Toon Boom to give away one free license for 3 months of Harmony Premium. And I just did the draw, and congratulations to Jose. You'll be receiving your license very shortly, if not already. And a super thank you for everybody who participated. I hope to do more of these in the future, so look out for them. This chat is with the super talented guys who run Exit 73 Studios. Their names are Chris Burns and Bob Fox. And you might be familiar with their style, which is very reminiscent of the early days of Cartoon Network. You know, they've done projects for TV shows, commercials, websites, video games, and more. But currently, they are best known for their in-production game called Hashtag Blood, which is also how I discovered them. I've been following and kind of obsessively following, like commenting on all their videos, and then I was just like, why don't I just reach out to them and ask them to be on this podcast? But I've been following them for a while, and finally they're on this podcast. I'm very happy to talk with them. And in our chat, they're gonna share how they started their indie game dev journey and got a producer involved, and also their strategic decision to share all their work in process over the years on social media. So without further ado, let's jump in.
Hello, Bob and Chris. How are you?
Good, how are you, Terry?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm great. We're just chatting. We're having a podcast, which is great. Yeah. thanks for coming on, first of all. I've been following Hashtag Blood for quite some time now. I super, super love it, and I want to chat about that. But first, why don't we chat about, you know, the nitty-gritty of how you got into this in the first place. What got each of you into animation from the start? Like, why did you say, I'm going to make a bet on animation, and here you are all these years later making a video game? Bob, why don't we start with you, because you're on the left of my screen.
Actually, I guess I probably followed Chris. Was the problem is he, okay. He Chris, went to the same high school. So. We went to the same high school, so maybe you take it first, and then I followed that.
As Bob mentioned, we went to the same high school and both had an art teacher who was really a big inspiration for us. His name was Vinny Nasta, Mr. Nasta as we knew him. And he went to the School of Visual Arts, which was art school in Manhattan. And one of the majors in there was animation. So I always had curiosity about animation, you know, as a kid, of course, you know, watching Looney Tunes and all the stuff. I was a giant He-Man fan. I before I even kind of understood they were cartoons, I had an affinity for them. So I knew I wanted to do something in art, you know, so I was going to follow in Vinny Nasta's footsteps because he did art and illustration. And I knew that was a good school because he was a fantastic painter. And when I saw one of the majors was animation, I kind of, you know, a light bulb went off and be like, yeah, I always liked that. And I also knew someone who was prior to us that went to SVA, followed in Vinny Nasta's footsteps, who was a year ahead of me. And he gave us the opportunity to kind of tour the school at School of Visual Arts.
Nice.
And I fell in love with it from there and sort of like, let me switch my major to animation because I kind of grew up with it so much and it was entrenched in my childhood and I always liked to draw and stuff. So that's what kind of got me into the door of learning about how to animate. And
then my parents desperately didn't want me to do animation, you know, let's do engineering or something else that's kind of like drawing, but not. But then I had Chris was going and I was like, well, look, somebody else is doing it. I can do this. And, you know, I ended up following.
Your parents were like, we trust Chris. So go ahead.
Much to their chagrin.
Interesting. So so you kind of had a clear path that you saw from other people kind of trailblazing ahead of you. And that gave you like confidence to go into it and the excitement of seeing it. And then you're both friends and then et cetera, et cetera. What is kind of, you know, has that excitement lasted all through these years? You've worked on tons of stuff together and now you're branching into different types of animation. Like, you know, what has kept you motivated to go really hard all these years?
I always kind of consider like when we start a project, you know, there's ebb and flow with every project. You mentioned like, are you still excited? Initially you're always super excited and then you can hit a lull and then you'll find something that you know, inspires you, even if it's kind of something that's almost a drudge, like a lot of commercial work, for instance, could, you know, wear you down a little bit in terms of morale. But there's animators that we follow and we're friends with from SVA, and I kind of try to animate for them in a weird way, if that makes sense. Like, I want to impress the people who impressed me in school. So I always kind of have that in back of my head. Like, I was like, what would X, Y, or Z think is a cool shot? Or would they be impressed with this animation? And I kind of try to bring that into every project, to be like, I'm trying to animate for people who appreciate animation and know the industry a little bit, and see if they find that interesting. And am I making the right moves according to them?
And do you get payoff when you say you're like doing a really cool shot and you're like, oh, Jimmy from university would have loved this. And then you do it how you think they would have loved it. How do you get payoff from...
I'll shamelessly show it to them. Like,
okay, you'll be like, hey, remember me from your 101 class?
I got a 101 class. Well, on my phone, I just, you know, I'll record it or something and send it right there, text it even before it airs on TV. I'm like, yeah, no, this is super secret. Don't show this to anyone yet. It's not on air, and see if they think. And, you know, I'll usually get a gauge from that, and they'll be like, oh, that's, you know, this is looking good. Or, you know, they'll say, and, you know, we're candid about stuff. So they'll be like, you know, I liked your other work better or something. So, it, you know, I'll keep engaged with them, with other like peers of ours.
That's, makes sense.
And I like to kind of approach every project like that. Animation for animators. It's like that. We're really heavy on traditional animation. Yeah. So that's what we kind of want to.
And I think being such a small team, another thing that helps is we can only do very short type projects. So, you know, you can't spend way too long on a project before, you know, you get burnt out a little bit, but it's kind of over by the time, you know, that starts to happen. And then, you know, you'd start the next project.
Yeah. Our bread and butter for the studio has been short-term animation. The longest animation, with the exception of the video game we're working on, has been like a 10-minute kind of like pilot pretty much. But everyone who hires us knows it's like, we're not going to get 22 episodes for you. You know, we just don't have the manpower, but we will establish a style or get you a short form animation the best we can.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too. Maybe we should rewind, but also skip ahead a little bit. So both of you, you know, have been working in traditional animation for quite some time, as in hand drawn. What made you decide to start a studio together? Why didn't you continue on the path of working for other studios? And working on TV shows, what was the turning point that led you to say, let's not pursue our next TV or film or whatever contract, and instead team up and try to get clients ourselves?
Sure. I think it was a few factors for myself. I kind of hit the ceiling of the studios I was working for. I could never be the boss, because obviously the boss hits you. So I made my way through the ranks and I kind of hit the ceiling there. So there was that factor. But I think the driving factor for myself was, we were both working in the city, and when we were 20 to 30, like, that was, the city's a lot of fun. Around 30, we got more serious with our fiancés that we both had at the around the same time, and we both grew up out on Long Island, which is where our studio is now. And it just, like, if we're going to starting families and starting a life with our wives, the city just didn't seem like the right avenue for us. So I think between those two factors, and then we're like, let's try to kind of move back to our hometown where we grew up and, you know, start a life from there. And that was my deciding factor. I was kind of wary of the city and wanted to greener pastures on where our hometown was.
I think I was also having burnout from like a Nick Jr. show that we were going into the fourth season, and I was like, I don't know if I can go back to the fourth season and do this anymore.
There is a lot of factors like that. You know, once you're kind of go through the industry mill a little bit, you feel animation's an interesting thing, because you'll get burnt out pretty quick, because the production cycles are always like, go, 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 stop. Here's have 6 weeks off. Go, 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 stop. There's no animation union, at least when in New York when we were around, so we didn't have the safety net. So every time we were working, it was to exhaustion, and then we'd get breaks, which was nice to have a break, but then the pay was not so much. So with those kind of factors of mind, we're like, well, can't we make what we make there doing our own thing in a location that we desire?
So you didn't consider to go to LA or, you know, another big hub of where the big studios are at. You were like, you had factors in your life where you wanted to kind of settle down, maybe stop burning out, and you wanted to go back to Long Island. You said, how can we bring a career with us instead of, you know, follow the career where it is?
I knew LA had more opportunity even early on when we first got out of college. It always seemed to be like the place where you go to, because it just the giant studios were there. This was kind of before any kind of like digital media took over, and like you could kind of do it from wherever. Yeah. It was like, again, with the kind of fiancés and wives situation, they wanted to be on Long Island as well. And it was sort of like just this mutual experience we all four, that his wife, my wife, and us two kind of had, that was like, we grew up on Long Island. If we ever to have kids, so I want them to be raised on Long Island. And sort of like that selfish, a little bit selfish there. That's sort of what we, you know, I won't say it was the main factor, but it was a major factor, kind of like uprooting our life and going to LA didn't seem like it was in the cards at 30.
And it was like right out of college, I got a job right in the city. So it wasn't like you ever had to, you know, I didn't experience, you know, a time with no work right off the bat. So I never thought about even leaving.
Right. Yeah, New York was very kind to us. We came in at good times too. I graduated a couple years before Bob, but the animation industry in the city wasn't bad at all. Like we hosted from job to job and landed studios, and we were part of studios and stuff.
I think the best part of growing up in New York was the small studios. So you got to learn every aspect of how to kind of run a business, how to run an animation studio, because you had to do everything from compositing, you know, editing, storyboards. So you got to learn everything.
Yeah, the small studio was one of our best teachers, because you're just forced to learn every kind of aspect.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, especially like all the things in the pipeline, I guess. When it comes, okay, so like, say I'm working at a studio right now, and I've been thinking of packing up and going back to my hometown and kind of starting my own studio. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking back to when you guys did this, how did the transition go? Like, what made it a success for you guys that you've been able to, you know, build this studio and work on all these cool projects over the years, versus like, what would you have done differently that you didn't know of in the start? Cause also there, you know, the pipeline, but did you know all the business side of things too? Like, you know, getting clients and accounting and, you know, overhead and all that, and pricing out things. Like what would have I asked a million questions. I should just let you talk.
I don't know. It was like the building up the client list was probably the hardest part of starting, because we knew how to do everything, but getting the clients was like the slowest and hardest part. But there was kind of contact from all the two different studio systems we were in that we could kind of lean on and ask, hey, is there any like little things happening?
So did you just like get up and move back home and then go, well, all right, we got to start from scratch? Or did you try to like build up, like make an announcement, try to ease in, then move? Like,
we sort of had like a soft kind of like, it was in 2012 that we like started the website and established the LLC and started putting feelers out. It's like, hey, we're going to start a studio here. So we kind of reached out to, and you know, we had about 10 or 12 years like working in the studio system before we even started our own thing. And you just, you know, word of mouth and a lot of clients that we were just friendly with, and a lot of animators that we were friendly with, you know, we had a big kind of list of people to reach out to and be like, hey, if you need help or you're interested, we're starting our own thing. We kind of did that while we were working at the other studios. And then we kind of had a hard deadline by 2013. Let's be on our feet that. So we had like this grace period for sure.
Okay, that does make sense. How long was it before you had, you know, you were full-time like income supportive work for two people to maintain families back in Long Island?
Well, we didn't have families yet. We had wives and stuff, but no kids yet. So it was a little cheaper. By 2013, we were working full time for what we're used to in terms of pay, though. We had a very strict budget. We knew what we had to make every month, and we kind of broke it down to what we would need per diem and kind of work backwards that way. So we had X4 budget. Our overhead was practically zero because we were still doing it. We were working in Bob's basement for a really long time. So overhead was cheap. We had our Cintiqs and all the animation equipment all kind of already because of freelance from other jobs. So we were just pure payroll for like the first year and a half. And just we were like, we need this much a week. How can we make that work? And, you know, everything begets itself. Like once you have one client and once you have one job, then you show that job off once it's finished and be like, we can do stuff like this. The second job gets a little easier. Then the second job begets the third job. And all of a sudden you kind of turn down work, you know, in a couple of years.
Social media was a big help for that too. Showing off like a finished project on social media was a big it was still pretty fairly new, I guess.
It was when in 2012, it doesn't sound like that sounds pretty recent, but the idea of a satellite studio was just like, I remember when we were like, we're moving to Long Island to start an animation studio, everyone in the city were like, you guys are kind of crazy. I don't think that's going to work. What if a client wants to see, they're never going to come out to your studio to check it out.
Yeah.
So there was that element. It seems, you know, now that's 2023, that seems ridiculous. But I remember that was a factor, you know, that people were kind of pushing in our heads. So all this social media was fairly new and stuff, and we get to show off our stuff and we put it on YouTube, and then we just spread it to everyone we knew. And every job we finished, we do the same thing we did from the beginning. We'd reach out to the same clients. Do you need this?
Gotcha.
Do you need that? And we had a really great first client, this guy, Joe Crossan, who works over at Netflix now, but he's been, we've worked with him a lot and on a lot of different projects. And he was sort of our angel investor in the beginning and took a chance on us. And, you know, we owe him a big thanks to sort of getting up on our feet.
Nice. So it kind of sounds like you had a little bit of a process in place to like a checklist to make sure that you were always kind of generating interest and showing off your work until you could get that steady work. And, you know, 2013 is 10 years ago. Have you had lulls? Because you're still a small studio. You know, there's tons of small studios out there. It's getting more and more competitive as, you know, studios around the world are opening up because of, you know, COVID made everybody comfortable over Zoom and international work. Like, have you noticed a shift, or it's just been like smooth sailing since?
We had like, I think the most we had was like 6 weeks off, where it got scary.
And 10 years. Yeah.
That was a 6 week, you know, we'd have weeks, but you know, we always like what I would recommend for a lot of people who are doing this or independent animators would be always have a side project that you're passionate about that just yours. So we wouldn't just sit there for 6 weeks and doing nothing. We're like, let's work on this short, or let's work on this IP or this pitch. And you know, at the end of some project that wasn't ours, all of a sudden that becomes a little vacation where you're just going to throw your whole soul into that. And so we always had that, and those done a lot of good for us. Like what the shorts that we've made always seem to get more work or more attention to our studio and stuff. So I there was never something that we fully animated that was ours that I consider a waste, because either it would get some attention on YouTube or Facebook or, you know, Twitter and that stuff, which would get us more work, or, you know, we'd put it in a film festival and get attention there and stuff. So we were always sort of on our next sort of passion project. We've always had that balance where even we take time out of our workday to work on the passion project, because we always had maybe a little optimistic, but we always knew that if we got this made, it would lead to better opportunities.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I hear that from a lot of other animators as well. Like the And it's true for me too. The most work I've ever gotten was from a short film I made years ago that's still getting attention. And it was just like a passion project for myself. I'm wondering, you know, your style is very kind of unique. I guess like what I'm trying to say is like you have a consistent style, I guess. Do you ever worry that you're not going to get work because you're not diversifying hugely what you can do? At least, you know, I've only seen the stuff that you've put on your YouTube and your website and stuff. You do have some various different like styles, but you have this like main style that's very recognizable. Is that ever a fear for you guys, or is that like a bonus that you have?
It's never been a giant fear for us, to be honest. We've done stuff that's not even on our website that, you know, that catered to the client. We used to work for this company called Bleacher Report, which was like a lot of rotoscope and like super realistic kind of motion graphics-y kind of stuff. So, you know, we kind of prided ourselves with like, if the client had a style sheet, we could do our best to match that and show you what we could do. So it didn't seem to hurt us, though, you know, it could have, like, someone could be like, oh, these guys can't do this style.
I mean, we can't do 3D. That's the one thing. But we could always try to match anything we could do in 2D.
Yeah.
We would always try to match to whatever they wanted.
Yeah, a lot of clients will come. It's like, can you do like an 80s style? We were working on a project that was strictly 80s for a while. And we knew, you know, as product of the 80s, we would be happy to try. And, you know, that client seemed to think we executed it correctly. So...
Product of the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, so am I.
Yeah.
Okay. So how big is your team now? Because from my perspective, it's you guys, one other guy, and potentially some freelance people you hire once in a while.
We have two kind of things going on. We have Exit 73 Studios, which is just the animation portion, which is just Bob and myself. That's just
okay.
Us. And everything that's been on our website or on Twitter has primarily been just us two.
So what is maybe held back is the wrong word, but what's held you back from growing the team and getting bigger projects? Because you also said you only kind of do short form. Mm-hmm. You know, what has kept you from doing longer form and hiring, you know, 10 to 15 people for a big project and pitching on those bigger projects rather than kind of keeping it in the family?
I suppose we sort of just catered our business model to be like, we're two animators and we could probably do the job of 3 to 4 people. So if we charge for 3 to 4 people, we'll always have a profit margin. So that's hard to scale, to be honest, because if you hire someone and you're like, can you do the job of 2 people? That doesn't sound right. But, you know, as owners, it's like I'm okay with asking us to go the extra mile.
You ever like email them from like a fake assistant's name and then like a receptionist name?
We're never very blunt about how many people we have on our team.
Gotcha.
I think when
they do get people hear when
that
they
it's
hear.
Two animators, there's a lot of like baggage that comes with that. And they're like,
totally.
They're like, who does the backgrounds? Who does the storyboards? You're like,
right. And you're just like, we're extra super talented. Why did you even?
Well, we'll just
you
be
have
like,
a fear though. Like, what if somebody gets sick, or like, what if something happens to one of the team? Like, you know, there's a high risk involved and you get a big project and then you can't deliver for X amount of reasons.
Well, luckily that hasn't really happened yet. And right.
We've usually, whenever we think we're going to be far behind, all of a sudden the client's farther behind than we are anyway. So
anyone who's worked in animation knows the first email where they say it's due and the last email where they say it's done. And those dates are usually pretty far apart.
Yeah, every project I've been on, it's like,
yeah, so
it's due tomorrow, and then 3 months go by and they're like, we haven't even
can you tweak that? Exactly. Yeah, so there's always like that sort of like buffer zone too.
Okay.
I want to just circle back, but the other thing we're working on, Exit 73 Games,
yeah,
I want to mention the team on that. It's Bob and I doing all the art. This is for our game, #blood. We have Cody Greenhelge and Andrew Tavis. They're our programmers.
Yeah.
And Greg Lane, who's sort of our producer,
writer of the, yeah,
of that. So that is our other kind of micro studio that we're working on. So we have a game studio and animation studio.
So but there, you know, there. Five, did I count correctly? Five, yes, people?
That's five for the video game.
Yes. Wow, that's a really small team. And what about like, you know, there's art and art integration. What about like music and like, I don't know, backgrounds and technical, all that stuff?
That's the, all everyone you just, everything you just named is Bob. He does music.
Wow, Bob is everything. Bob. Yeah.
And Bob wears a ton of hats.
He's, how did you get into music when you're an animator all these years? Like,
I just like, I don't really know music. I just like messing around in Logic and doing, you know, I've been doing right. that.
Don't know music, but just doing yeah. all the music.
Okay, to plug Bob a little bit, he could go on YouTube and learn a program really, really quickly. And we're working in Unity for the video game, and yeah. Bob's learned like zero knowledge going into that. For
wow,
I have none. I'm not even allowed to touch.
He's not allowed to touch it.
I'm not technical at all.
I'm barely allowed to touch it, but
but Bob's, you know, he's bringing the characters in. He's like implementing stuff. He's, you know, manipulating the backgrounds and all that stuff. So he's always been really good. He's been our technical advisor forever.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to make a Unity video game years ago and I gave up. It was a little tower defense game and I gave up like halfway through. I reached like a coding block and I just couldn't. What was the decision to get into video games? Because a lot of small studios, they, you know, they either want to get into TV, they want to get into film, they want more commercial work, they're trying out the latest technology. What made you guys say, hey, we've been animating TV forever, let's make a video game, even though neither of us, not even Bob with all of his skills, has done this before? What made you decide to do this?
A lot of our shorts, if you go on our YouTube, you could tell we have like an influence with video games. We did a pixel art series, you know,
like Coin was like a
we did a
product of the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. So video games have always sort of been something that we've always been interested in. We've always played them, you know, that was our babysitter growing up, like the Nintendo. So I always liked video games. I always liked the sort of audience that came with video games and all that. But we approached our video game as we would a television production. So really nothing changed from our day-to-day other than like, how do we implement this into a video game? And when we first started making hashtag Blood, we kind of approached it from like a video game angle where we just like,
I mean, originally it was a pitch we were just kind of working on as a short that we were making during we were working on a Disney XD short and we had some spare time in between stuff. So we made like a 1 minute kind of trailer idea for a kind of like a TV show of like a Buffy cartoon of a little girl that, you know, would hunt vampires. So we did like a 1 minute fight scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tried pitching that to Disney XD and they didn't want it. I don't know if we pitched it a couple other places and then we just gave up on it and never spoke of it again.
Yeah, there is anyone who's worked. We were working on a pilot with Disney XD, and there was something happened with the script where we were waiting around for the script to come in. So we had this kind of window of time where we couldn't work on the pilot, and we had this idea. So we kind of came up with that. We pitched it to Disney, as Bob said. They said, you know, they brushed it off, and then we resumed production with the pilot. So we're just like, all right, whatever, you know, we're back working. So we had this like 45 second video, super stylized. You know, there's zero, I think it was monochrome. And, you know, we sat there and finished our pilot, kind of moved on. And then our ex roommate, Cody, he's a programming major. He does interactive stuff. And he had some free time and he's like, what if we all kind of band together and make a video game? Because there's all these indie scene things, like there's these indie festivals that you can go. If you just get a little demo together, we can all go together and see if we can just make something. And he was looking through our failed pitch packets and he came across hashtag Blood, and, you know, something clicked. It's like, well, that would probably make a better video game than a television show, because hunting vampires is a lot more fun interactive, I'm guessing. And then that something clicked. So it kind of circles back to like anything we've made, we try not to waste, and we got this old idea that we were just like, yeah, let's try it.
I mean, it makes sense. You're both very talented animators. You know about pipeline. You just had like a little bit of a gap in video game knowledge, but now you have somebody who's interested in doing that. Where did you get, you know, working on a video game, I'm assuming it's more than part-time. You know, it takes massive investment. There's tons of art that needs to be made, tons of integration, all that stuff. Like, where is that? Is this all just in your spare time, or
the very beginning year or two was strictly spare time?
Yeah, we had these imaginary deadlines to try to get to these festivals, like these places like Magfest or Too Many Games, lot of East Coast stuff. So we had these deadlines, and we actually, the first thing we did was manufacture a trailer or like gameplay that wasn't. It wasn't in Unity yet. I sat there and animated this.
It was a video.
Yeah, I made a video, and that was purely me animating that in Flash as if a player was. So every that looks like a player was what I would hand drew it. And we sent that, and they were like, "Yeah, you could get this game in here." And then we're like, "Then we go kind of starstruck a little bit." We're like, "Oh, I guess we got to make this now." So we had this artificial deadline that we know we didn't want to kind of embarrass ourselves. So we set it up that way, and then we did it in our spare time. And we had all the assets from the video itself, so it wasn't like, you know, starting from scratch, really.
So, okay. So, interesting. So what, you know, you've never made a video game before. How do you know how to make gameplay that's going to be fun? How do you know how to make engaging content? How do you fit into what people want? Because there's so much out there right now too. There's so many indie games being developed, etc. Are you just doing things that kind of like by the seat of your pants, by the whatever your pants? Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we animate something and we like, does this look fun? If we always sort of followed our gut instinct and be like the same thing that drove us to like making shorts too. It's like, we don't really, when we make a short, goes back to that theory of like, we're animating for animators.
Yeah.
So we just approached the animation for this video game the same way we kind of approached that. And we're like,
that's specifically what caught my attention was the animation. It's like exactly the style that I look for, and like is kind of rare and looks super bouncy and fluid, and every frame is perfect. So at least from the animation perspective, great job.
Thank you. Well, it dawned on us, like, if the forefathers who made all the classic video games had the capability to not use pixel art, they would have. So when we first approached it, we were like, how do we make this look like a video game? And then it kind of like, then Cuphead kind of came out, and we're like, well, that doesn't look like a video game. That looks like a cartoon. And then we're like, oh, let's just make it look like a cartoon. And hopefully it makes interactive, you know, making it interactive look right. Mm-hmm. So that was a click, kind of a aha moment where just like, let's just make what we want to make and see if we can make it interactive and, you know, go that route rather than it's like, I want people to look at this and ask themselves, is this a cartoon or is this a video game? And hopefully they come to the realization that it's a little bit of both.
Perfect. So how did, you know, you got into the convention, et cetera. How did that go? Because you have investors now. So maybe talk me through how that went.
Our first experience was awesome.
You'd never been there before. Don't even have a video game. You have a little booth.
We have a booth. We have this thing.
We're going to a video game that was breaking a lot. The programmers would run upstairs to the hotel room and quick try to fix some bugs, and then
there's like some 10-year-old waiting.
Like anyone who's made going into a room with a door in a video game sounds so sort of minimalism like now, but like that's a giant kind of bug breaking, game breaking thing that would happen. But the reaction was great. The first we went to Magfest, I think it was 2019, and people sort of got it, like what we were going for, pretty instantly. They're like, you like Cartoon Network? It's like, oh, that looks like Dexter. You know, they knew the style we were like,
they knew exactly
what we were going for. They're like, oh, this feels like Zelda. You know, we're like, okay, so it's like,
fun to hear every person's, it looked like, because it was just, everybody picked their favorite show from when they were a kid in like the 90s and early 2000s. Kind of fun to hear.
Oh, this looks like Bill and Mandy. This looks like Ed, and Eddie. They kind of grabbed everything from early 2000 Cartoon Network and kind of put their impression on it. So the reaction was awesome. Everyone kind of got what we're going for. And I fell in love with the indie scene then, because the video game indie scene, I felt more welcome there than I ever sort of did in the animation indie scene. And I was like, oh, these are kind of, this is something I want to keep up on and follow. It just felt more.
And that was all on our own still. That was just the, like, we had a 20 minute demo mm-hmm. that was made. And then that's one, like, I think we did one more festival like that. And then we got, we got a publisher kind of contacted us and, you know, started talking to us about getting money to finish the game.
Oh,
after the demo.
Yeah. So going to a festival or a con or whatever is like a pretty good way to network with the business side of things too. I mean, it makes sense. Did this publisher like have a conversation with you at your booth or just?
No, that was actually more on social media. They saw everything.
You on social media and they're like, are you signed yet? Because I don't see any logos.
Yeah, we had some people asking and I don't know how serious a lot of them were, but you know, it all kind of came back to those artificial deadlines that we made. So we were going to too many games and we're bringing our demo and we're like, let's make another trailer. This one, let's focus on sort of the cinematic aspect of it. So we made like a cinematic trailer because we're like, this will be shown at too many games. And we made that and we put that on Twitter. And that's when Humble contacted us. And they were like, you know, we like the look of this, you know, let's talk. And that opened the doors for us.
So what is the advantage? I mean, I know there are a bunch, but what is the advantage of going with a publisher suddenly? Because do they, you know, because I'm sure there's some give and take. They have some say in what you do. Mm-hmm. They give you some money. They give you distribution. Like what are kind of the pros and cons you see with going with a publisher versus continuing to develop on your own and try to continue to wrangle social media and launch on Steam or whatever yourselves?
I didn't have a lot of cons, to be frank. They've been really good. They kind of know our vision. They're really accommodating to our thoughts and what we think the game should be. And the biggest pro was that five adults with mortgages and families could work full time on this game all of a sudden, which was not happening. Yeah. And, you know, we had no say over the programmers. You know, they had their steady jobs that they left to do this for, and so their schedule and our schedule, that we had no say on that. So if we were to work on a lot of animation, there was no say whether, hey, make this into a better demo and stuff. Now all of a sudden the publisher comes in and we can leave all our respective places and just focus on this full time was the biggest thing.
So you've been just working on hashtag blood full time for quite a while then.
Yeah, there was some overlap when we were working on a show called Storybots, when we first got full time into them.
I think I commented on your Instagram. I was like, as soon as I saw this in Storybots, I knew it was you guys because it was.
Oh, really? Thank you. Yeah, Storybots was awesome.
That was one of the best experiences.
I could do a whole podcast about how great that was. So yeah, there's a little overlap, but we knew, you know, come March or whatever the date we had, we were like, everyone's going to be on this full time.
Yeah,
it was insane how much more we could finally start getting done when we had like just full days to work on.
It's immeasurable because you just get a rhythm too. Like anyone who's animated, you can't really start and stop. Well, a lot of people have to.
As we've been talking on this podcast, we're still animated. No, that's congratulations. That's incredible there's so many people who try to manufacture success and like to hear how organically it started for you guys. And you just had these deadlines you were trying to hit and you're just, you know, it's a passion project and you're doing it for fun. I mean, I think that a lot speaks to that as well. You weren't trying to like get the attention of somebody specifically by making something they might like or whatnot. And I mean, for me, the game stands out and everybody, I've showed it to people too. And they've said the exact same things about like the 90s, early 2000s kind of Dexter's Lab look. Like that's kind of originally what I saw as well. So
it's funny that you say that though, because we fell into that trap early on with like pitching shorts to like Nickelodeon for the shorts program and stuff. Yeah. You're trying to make an animatic that you would think we animated so many shorts for them, so we're like, oh, we can make it just like the ones we animated, and
they're like, no thanks.
Yeah
yeah yeah
no, what the heck
Not that it's your idea. We don't like it.
I mean, I have like TV show pitches that I go around to like Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network every once in a while. And they always say, we love this, but can it be more like the stuff we already have? And it's like the opposite problem. And, you know, you just hang on to these until somebody hopefully picks it up. But what, you know, did you, with the video game, did you have any of that in mind? Like, say we want to put in these specific elements to capture whatever producer, publisher attention, or you're just like, let's have fun and see what happens.
Yeah, this one was more just,
I feel,
that was like, let's just have fun kind of, I think.
I was always chasing the feeling from the first demo we've made and the reaction we got from the actual audience and seeing people play. And I felt like we're onto something, or we're hitting an aesthetic nerve that people seem to like. And we're like, oh, well, let's continue down that road. If this many people liked it at this convention, hopefully that translates to it being more universally liked outside of this.
Totally. I mean, what if, say you foresaw, you go to the convention and you don't get any attention, what do you think, what would have happened? You would have kept pushing through or said like, we've met the deadlines, this was a cute project?
That's a good question. I would like to say we would have, but we might have, you know, just focused on something else for a little bit too, you know.
Because it's different when we would like, you finish a short and it doesn't do well online, but there's nothing, like then it's over anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. I don't know what would have happened actually, you know.
If it just got a kind of a smattering of a little bit of praise, it would have, you know, I still think we set out to do something. We set out to kind of have fun with our friends, and we don't get to see them in person all that much, and it sounds like a fun road trip and all that stuff, so you know, we had like all these like weird little incentives to do it. And I don't think it would have been considered a failure, but I don't know if we would have kept pursuing it, to be honest.
That's still awesome, and I love that you guys put, like, you know, you didn't just like, let's make this dumb little thing for a deadline. You actually like put a lot of heart and energy into it as well, because, you know, I've been on side projects where I don't really care, but I'm just doing it because you know, my friends are involved or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, I don't go all out. And then, you know, there must have been something that you all identified with on this game that I guess was super fun.
It was ours too, you know. It was like, it was 100% ours at that point. You know, it was like, we made what we sort of set out to do. So that, you know, whatever happens, if you do that, I feel like there is a sense of accomplishment at least.
Yeah. What's been the decision to basically publish every single thing online? Like all the enemies, all their movesets, all the animations, all the testing, like what has been the decision to do that versus, you know, hold off and do a big reveal with like a GameCon, you know, coming out in 2025 or whatever trailer?
Well, we haven't showed everything. We've
shown 500 things.
Yeah, we have a lot. Well, there's a lot of drawings, so we could spare a few. We haven't showed any boss sprite sheets. We haven't showed really any cinematics. We have a lot of cinematics in here.
There's some in your trailer, I guess, but that doesn't really count.
There's a few, but it's like, you know, we have chunks of cinematics that are like 25 to 40 seconds that to like this narrative thing. So narratively speaking, you don't know what's really happening other than there's a vampire apocalypse ascending on this town. We never showed the main villain or his counterparts or any of that sprite work. And there's between 7 to 9 bosses now, depending on the day you ask us. We haven't shown much of that either. So there is still a lot to be seen in this game.
Okay.
So we've been kind of focusing just on NPCs and, like, you know, chip shot enemies that interesting, but, you know, kind of gather what the game is without giving any of the secrets away, hopefully.
So speaking of giving secrets away, we've been chatting about this game for quite some time, but I don't even think we gave an overview for somebody who's listening of what it is. Do you want to give like a little log line or a bite-sized chunk of just like what it is, what it's about, who it's for, the gameplay?
It's called Hashtag Blood, and it's a hand-drawn top-down adventure, all hand-drawn, fully animated, very much in the spirit of like that Zelda Link to the Past kind of feel. But cross-pollinated with a Cartoon Network kind of flair from the early 2000s. So a very 90s to 2000s kind of slice of life. And it all takes place in this town called Carpentersville. And it follows the exploits of Becky Brewster, who's the protagonist.
Yeah, and she's killing some vampires or hunting vampires. Nice, nice. Is there anything we didn't talk about with this game that you're itching to share?
What's our count? Do we have a count of a frame? We don't have a count. We were definitely over 120,000 frames a couple. That was weeks ago, though. So we're definitely. Wow.
How do your hands look?
It's more of the just everyday that gets to you. But we have, six figures in terms of amount of drawings.
Wow.
I can only guess.
Random Unity storage space question. Does that mean that the storage space for the game is gigantic?
No, the programs have been really good about kind of mitigating stuff. Like if you see Becky, you've got your screen. I'm not explaining this for the podcast, but you can see here. The enemies won't show up until she's in a certain radius. So like it kind of like how I'm guessing how a 3D engine does. Like if you're playing Grand Theft Auto, and you're in one part of the city, I'm guessing the other part of the not town, generated. There's no characters yet.
But I mean, like even the number of assets
of
like,
sprite sheets is ginormous. Yeah, it's huge, but they've been pretty good at making sure everything fits.
Yeah, like if a scene loads and it doesn't need a certain sprite sheet, it won't show it up. So the programs have been really good about kind of allocating assets to minimizing loading time.
Okay, just curious because
it's a lot,
and compressing a lot of the stuff in certain ways to help take down the size too.
Yeah, cool. Yes. I mean that makes a lot of sense because most games are like, here's your enemy sprite, and that's it. But you guys are like, here's 15 different ways you can animate.
Well, and they have to deal with us because we're still using Flash MX from like 1998. So we're just giving them PNG sequences basically.
When we said it was a 90s cartoon, we're doing
it. Like we're only using 90s technology.
Only the computers are modeled. It's not just a top-down adventure. I'll leave it at that. There's other game elements that kind of take inspiration from other types of games.
Cool. Is there a release date for this as of yet, or like
we just have the year 2024. It'll be next.
Oh, okay, great. Wow, so that's coming pretty soon. Cool.
Yeah.
So what happens with your animation studio now that you've fully gone to video games 100%? You're still probably getting leads on. We said you're working on storyboard still stuff, but like, why not hire some animators in the meantime to like take over that, manage that, so you're still maintaining the shorts that you do? Or are you just going forward with video games now?
We'll just take a litmus test to see how well this video game does, and if we have the opportunity and it makes us enough money to go with our sequel or another game, we'll follow that lead, obviously. But to your prior question, animation, the industry kind of had a bit of a hit after kind of the streaming wars and all that stuff. And so I know a lot of animators really seasoned that are kind of struggling now. Mm. So this video game came at the right time for us, thankfully. So where we used to get a lot more leads and stuff, those kind of dwindled. And I don't know if it's because we've primarily been focusing on the video game, or if it's a byproduct of the industry kind of having a little rough patch with everything right now, or a little bit of both. So
makes sense. Makes a lot of sense to me. You've got this really great opportunity and the industry is having a bit of lull on the other side. So it's not like people are knocking down your door to scramble you back into short animations.
No, it hasn't been. We have been getting a lot more emails too about people needing work, which always sort of is a little bit of a barometer.
Yeah.
How the industry is going. Like we can kind of tell from our little, Venn diagram there. So
cool. So the video game's coming out next year, which is great. Mm-hmm. You're fully into video games. You've got the studio animation through. You also mentioned, you have families and mortgages and kids, which are expensive now, and you're only two guys still with like a third. What is the ultimate goal going forward? Where do you want to be? Is it just to continue to make cool projects that support your families? Or is there like a, we've been working for a while and we want to work towards this XYZ thing?
I kind of like the cool project approach, like what sort of inspires us. If we can keep the lights on and the mortgage is paid and the kids fed.
Yeah.
Doing kind of stuff that
the kids fed is the litmus test.
Yeah. 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 That is it. Yeah. So that has to be the first.
And then I think probably video game, like if we could keep it within video games, that would be amazing. That
cool,
would be,
cool. So you, yeah, you literally had like full careers and then now you're like, let's do video games because it's really fun.
It's been.
Yeah, I mean, my days feel the same. I'm still just character animating all day. It just happens to be interactive now.
And I'm really impressed that it's basic. All you guys, like I've been following you for a while and I'm like, I wonder how big their team is. It's probably small, but like they're really, really, really consistent with their animation.
Well, yeah, we've been, it's easy when it's just a couple of us though.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Cool. Okay. So that, I mean, you know, just keep living the dream and working on cool stuff and keeping your fids cast.
Yeah.
Kids fest. Fed. Wow, that's a tongue.
We're fed. That's sort of the goal right now. And you know, it took 20 years of animation experience to sort of get to that point.
I don't think
I could have done that right out of college.
What would you say to
I think just be learning to be efficient over the years has been the biggest help, like how fast we can get stuff done.
Yeah, when you're a team of two for the animation, you have to learn how to get stuff done in a unique way to make it look interesting, it look like more people worked on it and quickly. So kind of those three forces working together. And you just learn so many tricks by doing that when you're forced to. So that's, you know.
So can you give maybe this is a little bit abstract, but can you give an example of a trick that has really sped up your animation while making it look really quality?
Like your shimmers,
shimmers a lot. They're like, if you want something to feel alive, say like a hand-drawn or drawn back look, you can make, this is a Flash thing or an Adobe Animate thing, where you can make a symbol and trace back the symbol itself a couple times. So it looks like that drawing repeats itself over and over and over again. So if you make a skull shape, say, and you trace back twice, you have three drawings now, but the scene is 300 frames, you can repeat those three drawings and it looks like someone stood there and drew that skull 300 times when in reality you only did it three times.
It's like a boil is shimmer.
I've
heard it called line boil. Correct.
Okay.
There's that kind of stuff, but mostly it's like shot composition. You kind of learn how to, like, how do you tell this story in an efficient way. And it's like that's when boarding comes in mind. It's gotcha. Like, oh, we'll use a close up here and then we'll use a overshot.
You have to draw the hands 500 times over if you just close up on the neck.
Upwards. Exactly. Yeah. So like a lot of, it's mostly that the storytelling is where you
got you. That's actually interesting. I haven't really heard that before, you know, to save on animation, start with the storytelling and make sure that you're being efficient in the boards. And
It really helps if Chris is able to board the project that we're working on, because then
I see
it, you know.
I always, they're too. Like, we, if a client comes, it's like, we could board it for you. I was like, we could do it cheaper if I board it.
Right.
Because then I can kind of mitigate the stuff that we need to, because, you know, this board artist, once they're finished with the board, they're like, it's animations sort of crossed a bear now. And that can become a problem. They're like, oh, we threw another crowd in the back. We're like, well, you know, that's
let's get rid of that. Let's look at the floor.
Yeah. So no, if you could board it, and you know, there's so many creative ways. I mean, you think about the old school filmmakers who actually had to work on a budget and had
like Jurassic Park.
It's like, how do you tell Lawrence of Arabia? You know, he had a massive thing he had to do. He had to show this giant desert, and we're talking in the 40s now, where, you know, he had to do all this creative stuff. And it's like, if you think like that, like there's a budget, there's a time constraint, and how do I make this interesting visually, then you kind of come up with solutions just by force, pretty much.
Interesting. I mean, that's a really good tip. Thanks for sharing. You know, we've talked about where you guys started, how you got into animation, worked your way in the industry, formed your own studio, moved back to Long Island, got into video games, and that's where you're at now. Is there anything that, you know, we didn't touch on that you think would be good to share?
I think so. That kind of pretty much encompasses.
I've done my job.
Got us here. You did well.
Great. Well,
it's a lot of drawings in between.
You know, what's the biggest thing you learned working in video games, switching over from working on commercial and animation? Like, what's the biggest difference, I guess, for somebody who's thinking about making the switch that maybe you didn't realize?
I just found the industry, they're parallel, really, animation and video games. That, you know, you kind of have your audience, you have your fans and you have your conventions, and they're kind of parallel in a lot of ways. I just personally found the indie game industry a lot more suitable for kind of our style, because indie games, you can show progress. I feel like you could show kind of a prototype or all the way to polished, and it doesn't give any of the meat on the bone away, really, you know, because you still, with video games, you still have the opportunity to be interactive with it as a person. You could buy the game and play it, where animation, you really, once you view it, you already had your experience.
Yeah.
So you could just show so much more with video games, and you could show an idea and get this nice feedback from your audience. You kind of tell what's working and manufacture it that way. So I just found it a little more accommodating for how we work, kind of trying to please an audience while continuing to draw and draw and draw.
So on that note, how much feedback did you get while you were, going through the video game, other than the people at the conventions who were playing it? Were you constantly striving for, like, you know, how does this level go? How do you like this boss fight? How do you like the character animate, like all that stuff?
Yeah, it's always been pretty overwhelmingly positive, every kind of
that's disappointing. Yeah. Everybody loves it.
There's stuff we want to get fighting a little more in tune and stuff. So there's a lot of like AI stuff we're trying to kind of conquer, which we can show. But until you get the controller in your hand, you can't experience. Yeah. So there's a lot of that kind of finagling kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. That's super important.
Yeah.
And even at the conventions, you would get like comments that people would say things. You're like, oh, that's something we were concerned about too. So it's like, we definitely could fix this. Or
a lot of it reinforces sort of your fears and your
passions. I ended up redoing a lot of the backgrounds, because there's a lot of like people had some interesting things with the doors on the sidewall. So we kind of gave a little bit more perspective to all the rooms, a little bit more up angle on the doors on the sides of the rooms and stuff now. So
yeah, watching people play has been really interesting.
They're trying to like get into rooms that don't like exist. Is that what you
mean? Well, they were just watching that. Like, we just were flipping doors. So they were like all the same perspective looking drawings on everything. And people kind of felt, we were listening to people playing it, and they're like, oh, this looks a little strange. Something strange about the art.
It's too square, perfect
perspective.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Interesting. Cool. Well, do you have any other thoughts as we wrap up here, Bob and Chris?
I don't think so. No.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the chat. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy video game life to come on the podcast.
Oh, happy to. Thanks for reaching out. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, of course. Sure. And if you're listening and you want to, you know, follow #blood or check out Exit 73 Studios or just get in touch with Chris and Bob, you can do so by hitting them up on their Twitter, their Instagram, their YouTube, or their website, which is all Exit 73 Studios. And if you want to get #blood in your wish list, I'm going to include the link to the Steam store in that as well. So check that out. They're all in the description of this chat. And that's all for now. So thank you so much for listening. Okay, bye. The music for this podcast was composed by Willem Mendo and the graphics by Luhan Wang. I encourage you to look them up if you've enjoyed their work.